I have to confess, the lecture today and the next one is going to be pretty boring. So I'll try to make it as entertaining as possible, but that's the truth. And there are just a series of notation that I have to cover. Sometimes I think, considering that I told you it's going to be not boring, but heavy. So today is Wednesday. So Wednesday, Monday, the next Wednesday. You probably, some of you will be a little confused where we are going with all of this. If you have this kind of symptoms, I just want to, tell you that you're not alone. And I have office hours, so please come on Monday in office hour. And just that these concepts we're gonna go over and over and over. So don't feel panic. So I would say that this is probably a good 60-70% of the theory for the entire course. And most of the theory is about, it's gets covered the first few weeks because that's where we deal with the longitudinal models for continuous data. And so what we did on Monday, we start reviewing a linear regression model and tell you what is ordinal least square. So I'm going to finish this part, and then I hope to start with the general linear models for correlated data, which is basically extending the linear regression model to account for the correlation that is coming for the repeated measurements. Now, in order to introduce the general linear models for correlated data, I need to introduce some matrix notation, okay? And some people, other structure of a longitudinal data analysis class, sometimes they skip that component, but I actually think that is important. So it's one of the things we just have to go through one time in life, but then we feel very good about it. So I guarantee you'll feel good about it afterwards. So what is a linear regression model? Very, very quickly, I'm just going to bring this up again, okay? Because this is really what the kind of model we're going to work on for quite a while. I'm sorry. And so basically, we have a YIJ, which is our continuous outcome. J is the time point, I is the subject. We assume that everyone is measured the same number of time, n, okay? So J is time point, I is the subject, and Tj are the corresponding times. And so basically we have this linear regression model, which is Yij is equal to, this is just the usual definition, which Xij1, Xijp, are our covariates. And you see, we like to write the model in this way because actually this is a pretty general situation. I mean, this is an ideal situation. This is a situation where you have repeated measurements on your response, but you also have repeated measurements for the covariates. You see, also the covariates depend on J. And 99% of the situation that you will have will be linear regression model will be a specification of this model. Because you might have fewer covariates, you might have some covariates will vary with time, some covariates will not vary with time, and maybe all the covariates will not vary with time. But that's basically the linear regression formulation. Now, one thing to have a very, very clear in mind is, number one, what is a covariance matrix? And we have defined it last time, and you have to see it today again. And having clear in mind the covariance matrix, I have it clear that when you fit a linear regression model, you assume that your covariance matrix is diagonal. It means that you assume that you have variance of the measurements at each time and point, but you always assume that the correlation between any pair of measurements, so all the elements of the diagonal, is always zero. And that's what is indicated. Okay? So, you see, now, if you don't need to worry about longitudinal data, when I define a model in this way, it's enough. But because we're going to extend the theory, that's why what I need to do is to show you how you can rewrite the same identical linear regression model in a matrix form. Okay? So this is the same exact regression model. Now, here I'm dropping the J because I don't have, and this is probably why I confuse you a little bit, because I just have one measurement for each subject. So this is actually a simplified version of this one because you just have one measurement for each subject. But still the matrix form is the same. And you see you have the, your measurements Y is a vector of dimension M. And so I rewrite this matrix form. And now epsilon, which is a vector of dimension M, as it is a covariance matrix. And the covariance matrix, which is a sigma square identity, it's basically saying that you have sigma square on the main diagonal and zero off diagonal. And so by having a covariance matrix in this way, you basically say that the correlation between epsilon ij, epsilon I, and epsilon j is always zero. Okay? So all of this to say if you have a longitudinal data and you fit a longitudinal data set by doing standard linear regression, you are married this assumption that all of the measurements are independent. Okay? And we know that after you have fit an autocorrelation function or the barogram, which might look different than zero, if you estimate an autocorrelation function and the autocorrelation function is flat and centered at zero, well, then it's a reasonable assumption. But if the autocorrelation function, it's different than zero, can be even flat, but, for example, centered at 0.5 or decay, then assuming that you have a diagonal covariance matrix, it's not a good assumption. And so you have to extend and you have to model your covariance matrix. Now, another thing that we said last time is that when you have a linear regression model, how you estimate your vector of a regression coefficient, and I show you the likelihood formulation, so by estimating a maximal likelihood, so we review what is a likelihood function, so if you have just a standard linear regression model, how you define the likelihood function, and defining the maximal likelihood estimate, which is the estimate of beta that maximize the likelihood function. And we show that in order to maximize the likelihood function, you have to minimize the sum of squares. And in fact, if you have done a 620 series and a 650 series, in both cases, you cover ordinally square. And in the 620 series, I actually asked Dr. Ziegler, you have an appendix, where in the appendix it said that the ordinally square solution comes from minimizing the sum of square. Okay? So you should be able to connect the two series of lectures. For people that, actually, let me ask a question. How many people have already took the 650 series last year? Raise your hand. Okay. And how many of you all the rest of the six, how many are taking the 650 this year? Okay. So, ordinally square, you will have another ordinally square next week. But you have already seen the 620 and the 650. You're gonna refresh your mind again with ordinally square. So this way you can derive an ordinally square estimate of beta by minimizing the sum of square. Or that's where we left last time, is to also have an interpretation of the ordinally square, which we call the geometric interpretation, and that's how we quit. So X is your design matrix, okay? So X is design matrix, which has M. So X has a dimension M times P. M is the number of subjects. P is the number of columns. And you can write X times beta in this way. And basically what we want to do is to minimize the sum of square. Okay? So you can rewrite the sum of square as the product of two vectors. And the minimizing this vector transpose times this, it means to minimize the length of this vector. So basically what we want to do is to choose a beta hat so that the distance from y to x of beta is the smallest as possible. Okay? This is nothing different from what we were seeing before. If you have a linear regression model, you wanted to minimize the sum of square, and you want to basically estimate the beta such that the distance between each of yi from your fitted linear regression is as small as possible. Okay? And in order to do this, basically you want to have that the residual vector is orthogonal to x. Okay? So basically we want to find the beta hat that minimize the length of the residual vectors. And so under some, you know, if we know a little bit of geometry, every time we want to find that this one is, this vector is minimal with respect to in order to have a beta hat such that minimize this length, it means that this vector has to be orthogonal to this one. And so when you have two matrices, to make it orthogonal, you just have to assume the x prime y minus x beta f is equal to zero. So basically, trust me that in order to find the beta that minimize the length of that vector, we want to have the y minus x beta hat has to be orthogonal to x. And in order to do that, we have to solve the first equation. Now, solving the first equation is a piece of cake because you take x prime times y minus x prime x beta hat has to be equal to 0. So if you take this from the other side, it means the x prime x beta hat is equal to x prime y. And then it means the beta hat is equal to x prime x inverse x prime y. And that is the definition of ordinal least square. Okay. So x is our design matrix. So y is the vector of measurement. We have a linear regression model with several covariates. The best way of estimating beta is to do ordinal least square, and that is the definition. Y is good because if we estimate beta in this way, we maximize the likelihood function. And we minimize, so if we take the geometric interpretation, we minimize the length of y minus x beta, okay? So you see, actually, it could be, skipping for a moment the geometry, but it makes sense that we wanted to minimize this length. Because these are, you see, this is our outcome. And basically what we want to find, the beta at, such that x of beta is as close as possible to y. I mean, that's all it is. And that's why we want to basically take that length of the vector to be as small as possible. Okay? And so beta hat, which is our ordinal least square estimate, is basically what solves our request of minimizing the sum of squares. Now, why I'm stressing the definition of ordinal least square here? Because what we're going to do next, we're going to define a general linear model for correlated data. We want to extend the definition of the covariance matrix, which will not be diagonal anymore. And then we're going to move from ordinal least square to weighted least square. So we're going to basically define another beta hat where the definition will also depend on the covariance matrix, okay? So we will move from ordinal least square to weighted least square so that our estimates of beta hat will take into account the correlated structure of the data, okay? So that just to tell you where we are going. Now, ordinal least square have a lot of beautiful property. I'm just going to go through once. So in this way, we do a little bit of matrix algebra together. So basically, we have the first is I'm just writing a metric in matrix form, a linear regression model. Again, I'm just assuming that you have m times one measurement. X is a design matrix, is m times p. Beta is the vector of regression coefficient, and that is m times m. Okay? So I rewrote again the linear regression model in the matrix form. And then, again, you see, this matrix formulation is where you don't have repeated measurements. You just have measurements on M independent subjects. Okay? Then, at the second line, I define the ordinally squared, beta hat. And now, what I'm going to tell you is that beta hat, actually, this isn't a hat. I forgot it. Is unbiased, okay? Well, we always like to estimate our regression coefficient in a way that are unbiased. What does it mean? It means that if we take the expected value of beta hat, we're going to get back the true beta. And that's true, because if you take the expected value of beta hat, that is the expected value, and this is the definition of beta hat. You see that? Now, the design metrics are fixed. So they get out of the expectation, which is this part, times the expected value of y. And the expected value of y is x beta. Okay? And so you have that this is x prime x beta inverse times x prime x beta. So this is simplified, and this is equal to beta. So this means that if you have, you know, if you basically sample from a multivariate normal distribution many, many times, and every time you estimate your beta hat, then you average the beta hat across all the sample data set, and you get the true beta. Okay? So this is nice. Being unbiased is nice, right? Now, there is also that we can calculate the variance of beta hat, and I really would like that you follow this calculation, because we will do it again. And you will need to know it and to do it. So to calculate the variance of beta hat, we calculate the variance, and this is the definition, okay? Now, if you have a variance of a matrix, okay, this is just a matrix, right, times y, the definition is that this is equal to that matrix times the variance of y for the same matrix transpose. Okay, so this is a general definition, which is also laid out on the website. If you have to calculate the variance of a matrix I times Y, that is equal to I times the variance of Y times A transpose. Okay? So that's what I did here, you know, where A is, where the matrix A is simply X prime X inverse X prime. Does everyone see that, right? So this is A, and this is A prime. Okay? Can you see it? So now, the variance of Y is a sigma squared times the identity matrix. Okay? So then, if you take, so this guy here is only sigma squared times the identity, which basically it doesn't affect the calculation. So then you have x prime x times x prime x inverse, so that is all simplified. And the only thing that's left out is sigma squared x prime x inverse. Okay? You guys with me? Now, we can also take the expected value of y hat. Now, I'm going to keep that aside for a moment, because I have to define h. I don't know why I haven't defined h. So let's move these later, okay? Because I don't want to confuse you too much. But these are the two most important properties. The E of beta hat is unbiased, and this is the variance. And I really would like you to make sure you get comfortable with the calculation of the variance of beta hat. The only thing you have to know about matrix algebra is this one. Okay? So what we did is we had a linear regression model, just one measurement for each subject. We wrote it in matrix form. We specified the likelihood function. We estimate beta, which maximizes the likelihood function, which is the ordinal least square, which is equal to x prime x beta, x prime x inverse, x prime y. We showed here that it's unbiased, and we calculate the variance. Okay? Now, why I want to torture you that you have to know these calculations? You're wondering why. Well, because when we're going to do weighted least square, the definition of beta f will change slightly. And I want you to be able to write this variance because you will see in some situation our weighted least square will be more efficient than the ordinal least square. More efficient means that we'll have a smaller variance. Okay? So it's very important that you are independent and say, well, if I have something else here, how I can calculate the variance of the estimator and compare it with another estimator? Because the weighted least square, the generalization of this theory, is always going to be unbiased. I'm going to show you. The question is, it's going to be more efficient than ordinal least square. Okay? And so that's why I think that doing this calculation is important. Okay, now, what we're going to do is to move at the general linear model for correlated data. Okay, so now we take what we have learned at this point and extend it to the case where you have repeated measurements. Okay, and we're going to do one step at a time and then also do a lot of examples. So basically what we want to do is to develop a general linear model framework for longitudinal data in which the inference we make about the parameters of interest recognize the likely correlation structure of the data. Okay. And so there are two ways of achieving this. One is to build explicit parametric models of the covariance structure. Two is to use the method of inferences that are robust to misspecification of the covariance structure. So we have a multivariate linear regression model, and we want to estimate our beta, but we do not want to assume that the data are uncorrelated anymore. So there are two things we can do. One is to model the covariance matrix, or make it, you know, generalize the theory of ordinal least square so that is the point estimate is its variance take into account a possible correlation structure of the data, even if we don't model the covariance matrix explicitly. Okay? And so we will start by, I'll give you two examples of how to explicitly specify a parametric model for the covariance structure, and then we go to the robust inference. Now, you see, this is a step in longitudinal data analysis that people have like a little difficulty to digest. And the reason is when you do all of your statistics course, you're always focused on modeling the mean or specifying a regression model. You're always wondering, is it linear regression, is it logistic regression, is it Poisson regression, and then how many covariates should I include? Should I include an interaction, and so on, right? So this is what you worry about all the time. Now, in LDA, we have to worry about something else on top, which is the model for the covariance matrix. Can we assume that the covariates are all zero? Can we assume that are not zero but always the same? Can we assume they are different? And so you have to do an additional step of modeling that is guided by the autocorrelation function and the diagram. Okay? And so that's what I mean, build explicit parametric models for the covariance structure. So I'll give you some examples. And so what we're going to do, we're going to look at what I call the uniform correlation model and the exponential correlation model. And I'm just going to tell you right now what they are. So then You know, I'm sure you're very anxious to know it. So I'm going to tell you right now. So then when I introduce the denotation, you know, you feel so rewarded, I'm telling you already. So, okay, so VI, which is NN times N, is our covariance matrix, okay? So what is this? It's basically the variance of the vector YI, where my vector YI is YI1, YIN. And then I say that VI is always V0 for every I. Now I'm telling you what I'm talking about, okay? So first of all, so we are now in a longitudinal data world, okay? So our data are vectors. I is a subject, and the measurements for this subject is a vector of measurements. So these are all the repeated measurements from the same subject, visit 1, visit n. And everyone is measured the same number of times. Okay? Is everyone with me? So if you think about the body, the weight of the pig, so this is the pig eye. This is the body weight the first week. Its weight at the second week is weight at the 25 weeks. Okay? So each subject gave rise to a vector of measurements. Okay? So VI is the covariance matrix of this guy. And the dimension is n times n because the length of the vector is n. Are you raising your hand? Ah. Are you getting some word? Okay, so VI is n times n, where n is the length of the vector. Now, if we do ordinally square, we are going to say that VI is sigma square 0 and 0. Okay? If we do ordinally square, we say, I don't care, all the correlation and the covariance between each pair is always 0. Okay? But we are not going to do this anymore. So we now have a VI. And now I'm going to make a second assumption, which you will see later in the notes, that for making my life simple for now, each subject will have the same covariance matrix. So the VI are all equal to V0. Okay? And that's something I can do because everyone is measured the same number of times. Okay? So everyone has a covariance matrix of dimension n times n. Okay? So I could assume that my VI is equal to by V0, is equal to this, and I'm doing ordinally squared. Now, what I'm showing you is that there are two ways I can extend this assumption, which are very simple. And one is the uniform correlation model. Okay? What I'm going to do with the uniform correlation model, I am going to find I'm going to say that V0 is equal to, here is the variance, is always 1, and outside is always rho. So it's a basically I'm saying on the mean diagonal the variance is always sigma squared, and off the diagonal the correlation is always rho. Okay? So you see it's already an extension. So if I make that assumption and then I recalculate my likelihood function and so on, I'm not going to get an ordinally squared. I'm getting something else because my covariance matrix is different. So if I model my covariance matrix in this way, I'm saying, so this, I take sigma squared, so the variance is always sigma squared, and the covariance is always sigma squared times rho. Another way to say it, the correlation is always rho. Why I say it's uniform? Because I say that the correlation between every pair of measurements is always rho. It's not zero, it's rho. It can be 0.5, 0.8, 0.9, 0.2. But it's constant. So this is a model that makes sense when you plot an autocorrelation function and it's flat or close to be flat. Okay? That is the uniform correlation model. So you can take exactly the theory of linear regression, but remove this assumption, specify the covariance matrix in this way, and estimating rho as well. Okay? And that is a uniform. So it's a very, very simple way of modeling correlation. The correlation is always the same. I don't care what is the difference between the two time lags. And you see, sometimes that's not going to be reasonable either, especially if you have an autocorrelation that decay. So if you have an autocorrelation that decay, we, instead of doing the uniform correlation model, we assume an exponential correlation model. What is going to be basically is taking V0, which is equal to sigma squared, and then it's going to be 1, rho squared, rho k, and 1. So basically, I have rho and then rho to the power of 2, rho to the power of 3. Because rho, the correlation is between 0 and 1, what the exponential correlation model allow me to do is to have a correlation that is getting smaller and smaller as the lag difference between the time points gets larger and larger. Now, the uniform correlation model and the exponential correlation model is something we're going to deal for the next at least 2.5 weeks. So, but these are the two more natural generalization of a diagonal covariance matrix. Okay? Now, what we're going to do, the reason why we're going to work on this for many weeks is because what we will show is that there is a very, very nice correspondence between a model for longitudinal data with this type of correlation structure, with a uniform correlation structure, and the models for random effects or multi-level models. Some of you are very interested, okay? So I'll show you all the connections between making this assumption with other model formulations that are very useful in practice. Similar thing here, if we assume an exponential correlation model for the covariance matrix, it's basically assume that your errors are autoregressive of order 1, which actually is a very common model used in econometrics. Okay. So this is where we are going. Is everyone with me? Or if you're totally lost, please raise your hand. I'm not going to get offended. Or any question you have, that's fine. Okay? Yes, please. Okay, so well, I haven't told you. I mean, what I did here, I'm just running, I'm anticipating where we're going. And so I show you that the first two examples of a covariance matrices that we are going to use is in a uniform covariance matrix and then exponential covariance matrix. Both of these are generalizations of a diagonal covariance matrix, because the diagonal covariance matrix always assumes the element of diagonal equals to 0. So the uniform allows these to be different than 0, but always the same. The exponential allows that the correlation between each pair of measurements gets smaller and smaller as the time difference between the two measurements gets larger. Because this is a correlation between time 1 and time 2. This is the correlation between time 1 and time 3. You see a lag of 2. And this is the correlation between time 1 and time k. Okay? So now, when you start with the linear regression model and you specify a uniform covariance matrix, what we are going to do, I'm going to show you that will lead to a series of statistical models that we use all the time, and are models with a random intercept. When we specify a generalized linear model with this covariance matrix, with an exponential covariance matrix, these will lead another class of statistical models that are very useful, which is, again, a class of linear regression model. But what they have is that the errors are correlated as an autoregressive structure of order 1. And this is probably too confusing because I haven't told you yet, but this is where we are going. Okay? Yeah. Which letter you mentioned at the beginning of your question? Yes, this one? Yes, so I have, So I have one row, row squared, and row k. It's the difference in the two visits number. Because this is going to be, I'm just assuming actually k, actually, yeah, this is why probably you're confused, because that's supposed to be n. Yes, I'm making the simple assumption all the visits are equally spaced and everyone is measured the same number of times. But don't worry about now the exact notation here, because we're going to do it well. But I just want to give you the idea that we will allow this correlation to get smaller as the time difference gets larger. And then we're going to look at this model in very, you know, in very much detail. Okay? All right. So, you see, this is just an example of what is a covariance matrix. Okay? So, I'm just going to give you one specification. So, you have a vector yi, three measurements. So, the subject I is measured three times. And you have m subjects, so ni is equal to three. And let's assume that someone has told me what is the covariance matrix, okay? And so I'm showing you that the covariance matrix Vi is equal to sigma squared, and then you have all the numbers there, okay? So what is the interpretation of that covariance matrix? Well, the interpretation is that Yi1 and Yi2 are highly correlated. You see, the covariance is sigma squared times 0.9, and the correlation is 0.9. And you have the yi1 and yi2 are independent of yi3. Okay? Is everyone with me? Because you have, so because this is zero, so if I, for example, I want to have a numerical specification of a uniform correlation model, so if I say vi is equal to v and is the uniform, I need to assume that V is equal to sigma squared 1, 0.9, 0.9, 1, 0.9, 1, 0.9, 0.9, 0.9. So this is not a uniform correlation structure because you have a different, so this will be the uniform. Okay? And this is not an exponential, because here you always have zero. Okay, so it's just one particular interpretation. Because sometimes you can be general. You can just not need to specify any. So that's just an example of what is a covariance matrix. So now let's come back to our notation. Okay, so this is what we're going to work with. So we're going to have yij, this is going to come back all the time. J is the time point, I is the subject, and n is the number of measurements. And tj are the corresponding times at which the measurements are taken on each unit. I'm starting with balanced data just to start our life a little simpler. And basically, I have my xijl for l equal 1 to p are our p explanatory variables. And I just wrote a linear regression model in this way, where you have several covariates, okay? Exactly as we had before. And now what I'm saying is that now is because we have the longitudinal data, we are going to say that the covariance between epsilon ij and epsilon ik, which we call vijk, is different than zero. So vijk is the jk element of our covariance matrix Vi. Okay? If I have a uniform correlation model, I'm going to say that all my Vijk are the same and are equal to rho, so the variance times rho. Okay? So we're going to extend. Before, if you go back to your notes, you have the same type of thing, but then here we have assumed that it's equal to zero. So Now, what we need to learn to do before going to the data analysis is how to write this model into a matrix form, and that's what gets interesting. So, okay, so I have Y is our vector of measurement, and now I'm just for to make it as general as possible. I'm assuming that each person can be measured different numbers of times. You see, I have Ni. So the dimension of the vector yi is ni times 1. Okay? At the second point bullet, I'm just writing up the design matrix for person I. So the design matrix for person I as the first row, you see x is in bold, it's xi1. It means that is the vector of all the covariates for the first subject. And so I'm going to have the dimension is ni times p. See, so, right, so each row of these matrix is this one. You see, so the first row will be for j equal 1 because it's the first time point. For ni's row is the last visit. So I have the design matrix. The number of columns of the design matrix is the p, because it's the number of covariates that I have. And they for each entry of my design matrix, I have xi, because I is the subject, and j is the time of the measurement. Okay. So for each subject, so for one person now, see. So let's have an example. So let's assume you have one subject, and this subject has. So we have one subject, and then this subject has ni equal 3. Okay, it gets this the 3 times, and then every time we measure 2 covariates. So p is equal to 2. Okay? Well, what is going to be our design matrix? Well, it will have, you know, we'll have a dimension 3 times 2. And at the first row, we'll have the blood pressure measurements. Yes, so now, so let's say that so you have two covariates. One is the blood pressure, and the second one is the height. Okay? So what you're going to have that is going to be blood pressure measured the first time. So always the subject I, 1, and then high, subject high, 1. And then you're going to have blood pressure, high 2, HI 2, blood pressure, I 3, HI 3. Because that is the first covariate, that is the second covariate, that is the first visit, the second basis, and the third basis. Okay? So we have 3 visits, 3 time points, 1, 2, 3, one subject, and the subject, every time he gets visited, we measure 2 covariates. So the first row are the measurements of the 2 covariates at the first time point, measurements of the 2 covariates at the second time point, the measurements of the 2 covariates at the third time point. And that's what it's about. Okay? See, you're puzzled about it. See, it's a beautiful compact, so we can write things. What's up? Yeah.
What is that one in dimension y times 4?
What I mean is, what is the dimension of the vector? So by saying dimension of yi is equal ni times 1, I'm saying that this vector has n rows and only one column. So my design matrix has 3 rows and 2 columns, where each row is denoting a time point. And then each column are the measurements of that covariance at these 3 time points. Okay? Come on, it's not so difficult. Okay? Right? So this is a design matrix. So I can write my regression model in this way, in a matrix form, exactly as we have done it before. Yi is a vector of ni times 1. This is ni times p, p times 1, ni times 1. And now, my epsilon I, my error, is a vector, which we have together multivariate normal distribution with our covariance matrix Vi. Here I'm just rewriting the dimension. And this is our covariance matrix Vi. And what we're going to do, we're going to assume that Vi are the same for everyone, and they could be uniform, it could be exponential, it could be something general. Okay? And we're going to generalize all the ordinally squared theory to account for several different specifications of the covariance matrix Vi. So this one is a regression model that specifies only for a particular subject. But then we can write all our data set just in one equation by piling up all the information from one subject to another subject on top of each other. Okay? And that's what is this one here. So you see, we have M subjects. By capital N is going to be the total number of measurements that we're going to make. Okay? So each subject is measured Ni times. And we're going to have M subjects. So the total number of measurements is going to be the sum over all the subjects of this Ni. And I'm just going to write this huge, very, very, very long vector Y, which is capital N times 1. And what is this? It's basically Y1, the vector on top, is a vector of length N1, because are all the repeated measurements for the first subject. Okay? So the first subject, this is the 3 times. So it's the measurements for the subject, the first visit, the second visit, the third visit. That is Y1. Then I'm just going to put, on the bottom, Y2, and Y2 is the vector of repeated measurements for the second subject, and Ym is the vector of repeated measurements for the m subject. Okay? So I just take the vector of measurements for each subject, and I pile it up, one on top of each other. And so that gives me this very, very long vector of length capital N, which is the sum of Ni. Okay? Because suppose I have only 2 subjects. Okay? One gets measured 3 times, and the second one is measured 2 times. If I pile it up one on top of each other, the 3 measurements for the first subject and the 2 measurements of the second subject, the length of the vector is 5. It's 2 plus 3. And that's what capital N is. Okay. See, if you have 200 subjects, so let's think about the CD4 cells. You have to be able to represent it in this way, otherwise you will never finish to enumerating your measurements. Okay. And then a similar thing for the design matrix. So I take the design matrix of the first subject, and then I pile it up on top of the design matrix of the second subject, and then I pile it up for the design matrix to the M subject. So that is the design matrix of capital N times P. It's the same, just it's going to be for the P covariance. Okay? And similar for the vector regression coefficient. Now we have to talk about the covariance matrix. Okay? Are you still with me? So I told you we're going to have this very long vector of responses, which are the repeated measurements for the first subject, and then the repeated measurements for the second subject, and then the repeated measurements for the third subject. So we have this long vector, and we have to specify the covariance matrix of this long vector. And so that's what is V. Okay, V is the capital N times capital N, because N is the length of the vector. And these covariance matrix has on the diagonal the variance of Y1, the variance of Yn. So the variance of Y1 is the covariance matrix of the vector of measurement for the first subject. So each element of the diagonal is this VI. And off the diagonal are the covariance matrices between the two vectors. Okay? So let's think a little simpler. As I can see that your eyes are rolling. So we have always think when you get lost, always think simplest case as possible. Okay? So let's assume we have two subjects. Okay? So we have M is equal to, and N1 is equal to N2, which is equal to 3. We have two subjects. Each subject is measured 3 times. Okay? So then we're going to have Y1, which is the vector of measurement for the first subject, is going to be a vector of dimension 3 times 1. And Y2 is the vector of measurement for the second subject, and it's also going to be 3 times 1. You agree with me on that? Does everyone, absolutely everyone, know what I'm talking about? Good. So then what I did here, so let's step back. Let's go back to the previous one. I define capital 1. See capital 1 here, right? Well, what is capital 1? Capital 1 is a vector of capital N means 3 plus 3, so it's 6 by 1. And is what? Is Y1 and Y2. So it's 6 times 1 because I take the 3 measurements of this guy, and then I put the other 3 measurements on the bottom. So it's a 6. Okay, so if you want to write it up explicitly, will be my vector 1, y, which is a 6 times 1, will be what? Will be y11, yi2, yi3, y21, y22. I'm going to do this only one, y23. And so this is basically y1 and y2. Okay? So everyone, so Y1 is the vector of the 3 measurements for the first subject, and Y2 is the vector of the 3 measurements for the second subject. So I take the two vectors, I pile it up, one on top of each other, and I get Y, which is dimension 6. Okay? And this is what I'm writing here. Y1 is this one, which are the vector repeated measurement for the first subject, and so on. Okay? Is everyone with me? Sure? Okay. So now, so I'm going to go, so we are here. See, I see that. Forget it. Now, so we have these, and now what I'm trying to do, I'm just going to tell you, give you the example how you define the covariance matrix, okay? So now you see this V here. Now we have these two vectors, okay? okay? So these are two vectors. This is a 3 times 1 and 3 times 1. And now I'm calculating the covariance matrix of Y, which is that V here. That V will have a dimension 6 times 6 because this is the length of Y. Okay? So the variance V is going to be a 6 times 6, and it will be equal to, oh boy, the variance of Y1, the variance of Y2, and the covariance between Y1 and Y2. Okay? So this is the covariance matrix of 6 times 6, which will be the covariance matrix of Y1, of the first vector. The other diagonal would be the covariance matrix of the second vector, and the alpha diagonal is the covariance between the two vectors. And that's what I have in that first bullet here. Okay? So all of this to say that we are going to simplify and make this assumption, rewrite that V in this way. Before understanding what we are doing, we need to understand what are the different elements. So let's come back. On the main diagonal, variance Y1, variance Yn are the covariance metrics of the repeated measurements for each subject. Okay? Y1 are the 3 repeated measurements for each subject. So this is the covariance matrix for the first subject. And we don't want to assume that this is a diagonal matrix because we want to allow for the correlation of the repeated measurements within a subject. So the element, the diagonal, the covariances, the covariance matrices that are on the diagonal of this gigantic covariance matrix will not be diagonal because, so these are all n by n, okay? As this is a 3 by 3 and this is a 3 by 3. And we don't want these covariance matrices to be diagonal because we are looking at the covariance matrix of the repeated measurements within a subject, and these measurements will be correlated. Now, when we go off the diagonal, this is the covariance matrices, the covariance matrix of the two vectors of measurements for two different subjects. So there would be, what is the correlation between the measurements of subject 1 at time 1 and the measurement of subject 2 at time 1? And what is the correlation between the measurements at time 1 of subject 1 and the measurements of time 2 of subject 2. I don't care. That is going to be 0. Okay? So the reason why we're going through all this painful exercise, because this is the big covariance matrix that we're going to worry about. So what we'll assume that the covariance matrices of the vector of repeated measurements for each subject will not be diagonal. So 1, 2, m are our subjects. We have m subjects. In this toy example, we have two subjects. Here we have m. So the covariance matrices will not be diagonal. They could be uniform. They could be exponential. They could be something else. But an assumption that we will make would be here, we will assume that the correlation between the two vector measurements of two different subjects, independently of what is the time lag, will always be 0. Okay. One assumption, for example, that this could not be valid is that if you have two patients that get visited the same day, and, you know, of a test for respiratory infection, and that day there is, you know, an epidemic of respiratory infection, there is a virus going around, and so if you have the two subject measured the same day, it's possibly going to be the correlation of a positive response between the two subjects. It's hard to think about correlation structure between the measurements of time one on one subject and measurements of time five on another subject. I mean, they are not going to relate them, okay? And that's why here and here is all zero, okay? When in the block diagonal of this big covariance matrix, we specify the covariance matrices for the repeated measurements of each subject. And actually, what we're going to do is that if everyone is measured the same number of times, then we are just going to say that all of these guys are all equal to each other and are equal to V0, which is what I have here. Okay? And that would be the first step, the first model for correlated data that we are going to look at. So these are the two transparencies which tend to be heavy. But if you just take m equal 2, n equal 1, n equal 2, equal 3, and write it up, what capital Y is and what the covariance matrix is and what they mean, okay? And then it is not hard. And if it still is not clear, come to my office on Monday. We'll do it again, okay? But that is the assumption that we make. We're going to make the assumption that if everyone is measured the same number of times, we're going to assume that the repeated measurements within each subject are correlated, the covariance matrix is V0, that we will need to learn how to specify, but the cross-correlation of the two vectors of measurements for two different people, independently of the time, lag, and whatever, are always there. Okay? And you can always get fancier and also assume that these are not zero, but that's another chapter. Okay. I'm not gonna do here. So now I torture you assuming that we are in the most general case as possible for the covariance. I gave you an example. I mean, I wrote all of these in a matrix form to allow for the case where you have each subject is a measure of multiple covariates, which also vary with time. But actually, you know, most of the time, we are not going to have such a rich data set. Actually, if we have a data set so rich, that would be really beautiful. If you think about that you have several subjects where you measure the response, and you also measure the covariates, a lot of covariates at each time point, that would be very nice data set. But it's not always like that. So there's going to be situation which we have a little less data, means that we have our covariates have a specific form. So one case will be I call it a cluster specific and time invariant. So cluster, here we have each subject is a cluster, right? So basically we measure covariates for a subject, but it's always going to be the same. Race in a longitudinal study, right? So race definitely is not going to change with time. Gender sometime. Rarely, though, no, I hope. Okay, so that is an example. If you have a longitudinal study, you have people at baseline, you collect gender and race, and that's always going to be the same. They're not going to change from time to time. Or they can be subject specific, but they can vary with time, okay? Blood pressure. Okay? Smoking status is another one. So smoking status, every time the patient get visited, you know, how many cigarettes have you smoked in the last week? Okay, and that can change. Sometimes are fixed by design. So basically, remember when we had the ozone data set, we have a bunch of trees are in ozone chamber and another set of trees are in control. Well, that is basically is our covariate X is a binary covariate, which is basically indicate the treatment. Treated, non-treated. And that is fixed. So by design, it's not going to change. Now, we are not going to deal with the number 4. Sometimes you can generalize all the theory assuming that your covariates are random as well. But we actually always going to say that our covariates are, you know, some fixed information that we have about our study, and we are not going to allow for randomness in the covariates. So, okay, so I think we... we covered the notation, and now I'm going to finally tell you a little more about this uniform correlation model. So again, I'm going to come back. This is going to go over and over. That's why if you don't understand what I mean by why, please let me know, okay? Because otherwise it's going to be really painful for you. So y is y1, ym, which if each of these vectors is a vector of n measurements. And X is your design matrix. And so what we're going to assume that the large, big covariance matrix V is a block diagonal matrix with the non-zero N times N block, V0, each one representing the variance matrix of the repeated measurements for each subject in the study. Okay? And so what we're going to follow and consider the following multivariate normal model. Okay, so again, my y will be n times 1. This will be n times p, p times 1, n times n. And my v, which is nn times n, will be v0, 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 and over 0. And so now the question is, so now we have a vector, we have a distribution, which will be the multivariate generalization of a normal distribution. And the question is, how do we pick V0? And we can pick V0, assuming it's uniform, or if it's an exponential correlation model. So I'm just going to tell you again what is the uniform, and then I'll... So sometimes it's also called compound symmetry. So if you are in a very nice situation where everyone is measured the same number of times and the measurements are equally spaced, sometimes it's reasonable to assume that the correlation between every pair of measurements is always rho and doesn't depend on the time difference. Okay? So that is what we say we use a uniform correlation model for our covariance matrix. So the variance is sigma squared, which is just off because it's going to be the same for everybody. And so basically, what we're assuming that the variance is always sigma squared, and the correlation is always rho for every pair of J and K. Okay? So how you see that? That the correlation, why the correlation is, so this is the covariance matrix. Every off diagonal element we know is defined as the covariance. So the covariance between yij and yij plus, the correlation between yij and yij plus k is equal to the covariance divided by the square root of the two variance. The covariance is this off diagonal element, which is a sigma squared times rho. I mean, every time you have a sigma squared, it means a sigma squared multiplied every single element of the matrix. So the covariance matrix the covariance between every pair is sigma squared times rho, divided by the variance of the two guys, which is always sigma squared. So it's sigma squared times sigma squared, square root, it's basically rho. Okay? So by making this assumption, we are saying that the variance of the measurement is always sigma squared. The covariance is always sigma squared times rho. The correlation is always rho. Okay? And so let's assume you have a data set, a longitudinal data set. And let's assume that everyone is measured So the measurements are equally spaced, and everyone is measured the same number of times. You can calculate the autocorrelation function, right? And the autocorrelation function looks like flat, and then you are done. You do XT reg correlation uniform, and you have a sensible analysis, okay? And what's going to happen in this case is that by doing, assuming a uniform correlation structure, you are also fitting a model with a random intercept. And I'm going to tell you Monday what it is, okay? But if you have unequally spaced data, then you see it's already going to start, you know, if you have unequally spaced data, you have to estimate the variogram and the type of model for the correlation structure. It's probably going to be more complicated than a uniform. So if you take the, I gave you, at the beginning I showed you the data set where you have the weight of pigs over time. Remember that we talked about the tracking, that the smallest pig at the beginning is also going to be. So that is the typical data set where this kind of uniform correlation structure actually kind of works. And so try to do it. So you have the data set. And we're going to analyze the data set together after I finish covering the theory. So you have a data set. They are equally spaced and it's balanced. You estimate the autocorrelation function. And you will see that the autocorrelation function is not flat, but almost. Okay? The correlation is like 0.9, 0.8, and gets as low as 0.82, something like that. So it's almost flat. And instead, you are interested in estimating how the body weight changes with time, accounting for the correlation. Well, what you do, you feed a linear regression model where your covariate is time, but then you have to estimate the variance of your beta hat, of your rate of change, right? Because the autocorrelation function is almost close to 0.8, if you do ordinally square, the standard error of your regression coefficient is going to be wrong. So if you do test of hypothesis, you're just going to get the wrong conclusion. But because the autocorrelation function is almost constant, you just do XT reg correlation uniform, and you will see the point estimates of the rate of change will be similar to the ordinally square, but the standard error could be smaller or larger. It's not always smaller. It depends on what is the autocorrelation structure. So then when you're going to do test of hypothesis, that is there a linear increase of the weight on time, you know, you will get the right inference. Okay? So this is what we are doing. Now, when you get more and more complicated data set, then we have to do a variogram. And we're going to look at the variogram. And what we're going to do, we are just going to make this specification of V0 more and more complex to allow the different sources of variation in the data. Okay? So that's basically what is longitudinal data analysis. Okay? So I'm just gonna quit here and I'll see you Monday.